Hey everybody, I'm seeing some really fascinating questions come in, and they're fascinating for an interesting reason, and we'll get to that in a little bit. So I've teased this for a while, talking about photography, and I had mentioned that I was thinking about doing it a certain week, and the response was so huge that I decided to devote a whole month to it. But what you're going to notice, I've got a series of webinars on photography that we're going to be doing for the next few weeks. And some of the questions that I've had coming in are about the mechanics of photographing for magazine that I'm going to address. But I just wanted to say up front, if you have questions about photography itself in terms of how to use cameras, which one you should even have, how to use different settings to best advantage, about photo editing, that's not so much what we're going to talk about in the next couple weeks, especially in the one today, because what I want to focus on is the stuff that you actually need to know to be getting out there and getting your photos into magazines, because it's probably a lot less than you think. One of the things that we're talking about a lot in the boot camp this week is how much research do you really need to do before you send a pitch? And ironically, it's actually not a lot, because if you do too much research, you get bogged down with all of this amazing material that you're so in love with these people that you've met and their stories and the history of this place and those stories that you have far, far too much for one article, let alone one pitch. And I'm going to tell you some similar things about photography. We've also talked this week about taking tons and tons of photos and when do you have the time to go through them, and mechanisms for organizing your photos and doing that quickly. And that's not something that I have a webinar on specifically scheduled this week. But if you want more in terms of productivity, time management, management of your photos in a way that you are able to use them well and quickly for pieces and select them quickly and edit them, when you get an editor that suddenly wants something and now you have to go through an entire trip, let me know. And I can add one of those in later on in the series. So somebody has popped in the chat box and said no sound. And I just want to reiterate, and I'm going to type this in the chat box. If you're having any trouble seeing or hearing, then use the button at the top that allows you to reboot, or you can just reboot the page. So reboot the page if you're having trouble. And that will often fix the problem. A lot of people said that last week. So there should be a button for that on the attendee side. So I've seen some various questions come in. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to start the call and then I'll take a couple breaks in the middle to answer the questions we already have. And please go ahead and keep those coming throughout. So today we're talking about specifically, I said we've got a whole series of webinars on this, but this week, what I want to start with is framing. What are the photos that you even can be using for magazines, should be using, that you should be shooting if you want to be getting into magazines? So I see a lot of people are interested in doing the more productivity-oriented webinar on organizing the photos and how to use them. So I've just added that to my list. So we'll do that at the end of this series. So thanks so much for that feedback. So in particular, the way that I've structured the call today is that we're going to look at who is publishing freelance photographs today, because it's not every magazine, and some magazines are doing it in a different way. And I'm going to give you a very simple rubric for knowing the answer to the question that I get a lot, which is, should I mention in my pitch if I can provide photographs with the piece? And then we're going to talk about how, when you are both shooting and researching your stories, how that needs to change the way that you work on the ground in order to get the photograph or the type of photographs magazines are publishing versus what you might be shooting right now. And then I'm going to walk through a magazine, not every single page, but I'm going to walk through some different spreads in a magazine so that we can look at the different varieties of photos. And I just wanted to add, and I'll tell you what the other webinars in the series are later in more depth, but I just wanted to add that the next webinar in this series on photography, the one that's going to be next week, is all around creating a shot list. And that's going to make more sense when we talk about it. But as I'm talking about the different types of photos that are appearing in magazine, I'm going to talk about much more about those different types of compositions, how many of these different types of things that you should plan to get, what, like, you know, if you go to a destination, you need to get this, 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 and this. So we're going to launch more in depth about the composition, the framing, the cuts, the lighting, night and day, attractions versus people. We're going to do a whole webinar just on that next week. So before we get started on, like I said, exactly which photographs magazines are looking for as opposed to what you're shooting now, I just want to touch on this. Why are we talking about photography? Obviously, there's a huge interest in this, and I noticed that when I put the idea out in the first place about doing this webinar. But isn't my whole MO that if I know that something is a pain in the butt and it's going to take you way too much time for the money that you get, that I just tell you I'm not even going to teach you that because I don't want you doing it? So why am I talking to you about photography? Because I'm sure I'm not the only one, but I have terabytes and terabytes of photos that maybe they could be stock photos. I don't know. I'm not doing anything with them. And every so often I go back and I look at them and I'm like, wow, these photos are just not as usable as I thought. Or I'm like, my God, I should pitch a photo essay around this. But we all have so many photos that we're sitting on. Sometimes they're photos that we've taken for notes. Sometimes they're just amazing shots that we gotten. But it just seems like a big suck. Personally, for me, for travel writers, it's something that we typically do, we spend time on, but most people aren't really moving and shaking with those photos later. They're not really making those photos work for them. So why am I talking to you about this today? So part of this, of course, is that we're talking about the photos that magazines will buy, but don't magazines have their own photographers? Or don't they get the photos from stock? Like, would they really take your photographs? And this is something that people have asked on webinars in the past, and the answer typically is it depends. But now I'm going to give you a framework for that it depends, so you know which magazines you should be targeting, how and why. And so I call this the ABC setup in terms of the different types of magazines. So the ABC breakdown of magazines goes like this. An A-level magazine, these are kind of like ABC celebrities, or I talked last week about ABC rejections to your pitch letters. So an A-level magazine is a magazine that is internationally distributed, is a household name. People who do not work in travel know about this. Now, there might be national magazines that all of us travel writers know. For instance, American Way on American Airlines, that's actually technically international, but it's an airline magazine, but it seems kind of like a household name, right? So I tend to call those A-minus magazines. So like they're still A's, but they're weak A's, okay? So the A magazines are more things like Travel and Leisure, Condé Nast. I typically kind of end it there, but also there's National Geographic. You know, we can think of the New York Times in a way as an A magazine, but the A magazines are really, when I say household names, I mean very seriously household names. And then an A minus magazine, the reason why I separate these out is that they function differently in terms of pitches and how they assign things like photographs or even just stories for that matter. So I'll talk about the A minus magazines differently. And so what then is a B magazine? A B magazine is going to be something like a major regional magazine, or it can also be a major city magazine. So for instance, you know, I talked about how New York Times could be an A publication, a straight A, not even an A minus. So then how does that work out? So a city magazine, which is a B magazine, would be like Boston Magazine in terms of the rights that they buy, and also the Boston Globe for that matter. In terms of the rights that they buy national rights. They act in many ways like a national publication. Also things like this would be Midwest Living, Southern Living, Sunset Magazine, Coastal Living, things of that nature fall into the B category. So these are the kind of things that you would find on newsstands, but not necessarily newsstand around the country. Other B magazines are magazines that aren't regional, but they're not on every newsstand because they're niche specific. So these would be magazines that are things like Tea Time, for instance, which is produced in the South, and you can find it on a lot of magazines, but it's quite regional. You know, Every Day with Rachel Ray is a very regional magazine about food, but that would be an A category magazine. So something that might be a B category magazine that's topical, that's similar, is something called Where Women Cook, or Taproot, which is similar in terms of being a food magazine. It's similar to, say, Saveur, which is an A magazine, but that's a B magazine in that it's, or perhaps even a C, we'll get to that in a second, but you can find it on newsstands, but only in a specific geographic area or only in areas that tend to have people of that topic. Modern Farmer is another good example. Modern Farmer is a magazine which is pretty new, but it's very well done and it's available on newsstands, but not necessarily everywhere. Typically places where people might be interested in, whether it's urban farming or perhaps moving into a more farm-oriented profession from where they are now. So those are B magazines. So what's a C magazine? A C magazine is going to be the kind of thing that you can break into with a not very good pitch as a new writer. That's an odd designation, right? But it's a very big bucket. So I can give you huge lists of what C magazines are, but it's essentially the type of places where you see a lot of long features that might be written by people who aren't full-time professional writers. It's the type of places that pay, say, $300, $400, or less dollars for each of their features. And these are also going to be the kind of places where you'll see a lot of photographs that are inherently taken by the same person that wrote the article. So let's use the C magazines to dive into why these different designations of magazines are very relevant for what we're going to talk about today. So with a C magazine, it's not even just the case that what you see is typically a photographer and writer package, that the photo has produced a package of both the photos and the words as part of their fee for that piece. But in the case of C magazines, almost universally, if you have pitched them a story and you don't have photographs available to support that story, you won't be able to get the assignment to write the story for that publication. So in this case, it's not even just that you're able to publish your photos with your pieces. It's that you are, in many cases, required. But here's the catch. You don't always have to publish your photos. So I've been just waiting for somebody to ask a question about, you know, do they also pay you for photos? And like I said, we're going to talk about that specifically. But there's this really beautiful out for this. If you are writing for something like a C magazine, which requires the package, it requires you to submit the photos along with your piece, you have to submit the photos. But you don't have to submit your photos. This is the beautiful thing. So what does that mean? If you're not submitting your photos, then what are you submitting? I've recently heard them called handouts, but I just think of them as promotional photos. You can instead be providing with your story the photos that come either from the tourism board or they're the photos that the place that you have gone to has on hand for their own promotional purposes, you know, whether it is a hotel or an attraction or a tour operator, the photos that they have taken that they use in their own marketing, they can give you to use with your stories in C magazines. This is the very important distinction. So you can use handouts with C magazines, but that's pretty much it. But the reason that it's important to know that you can use handouts for C magazines is that C magazines are relatively unlikely to be paying you for the photos to accompany your piece. Again, catch 22, you can't publish the story without the photos, but then do you really want to spend a bunch of time editing a bunch of photos to beautiful perfection if you're not going to get paid for them and you're already not getting a ton of money for the article? Probably not. So use handouts or work with a photographer who is interested in getting their work out there a little bit more and doesn't mind being published for free, but I don't want that to be what you guys are doing. So let's talk about the B magazines. So in B magazines, now you're starting to see a lot of pieces that will have photos, again, that are shot explicitly for that piece or that accompany that piece, but they're typically going to be part of a photo text package where the price for the photos is included. So for instance, if you are writing a story for Tea Time and you pitch them just the text and they had their own in-house photographer go get those photos, you're going to get paid one number. But if you're able to produce both the photos and the text, then they're going to give you a different number, which is the payment that they would pay for a photographer to procure those photos. So B magazines are great in this way because you can get that extra photography fee. So I also want to here talk about B, not just magazines, but also newspapers. So there are several newspapers around the country that still publish travel articles that are not the New York Times. And these magazines, or sorry, these newspapers will also pay you for your photos additionally in the same way that a B magazine will. And it's not just that they will also pay you for your photos, but as it should be, they pay you for every license, every rights usage of that photo, which means if they use your photo in the print newspaper, you get one amount of money per photo. And if they use it again online, you get another amount of money per photo. And this is very curious because when we write, they don't tend anymore to pay us a second time when they put our text online. But with photos, the rights arrangement is a bit different. So with your photography, this is a tiny contracting aside, you want to retain all rights to all of your photos and be giving the places that are publishing it a single one-time use license. So this is a bit different than words. With words these days, because of the internet and, you know, how it affects people's Google scores to be publishing the same thing, it's much harder for publications to justify giving you a single use license or letting you retain the words. But with photos, you can and you should. So Naomi has a great question. Do you have an idea of the ballpark circulation numbers for A, B, and C magazines? Mostly trying to distinguish between B and C. So Naomi, the good way to distinguish between B and C is that C's are often not going to be magazines that you would get on a newsstand. So for instance, the edible magazines would fall into this. So edible magazines, if you're not aware, can only be procured in the stores or restaurant establishments or what have you of places that have advertised in the magazine. So you can't, although I feel like in New York I've seen them, but in theory you shouldn't be able to buy an edible magazine. You have to get it from somebody who advertises. So that's not a newsstand magazine. And that's going to be the kind of case where you need to submit photos of your piece. And from what I've heard, of course, every edible is different, but they're not going to pay you for that. So like I said, typically the B magazines will be found on newsstands and C magazines will be found other places. Another example on the newspaper side is that, you know, alternative weeklies, right? Alternative weeklies in most cities are just distributed through their own free boxes on the sidewalk. So that's not a newsstand newspaper. So that would put that in the C category as opposed to the local magazine, the local newspaper, which would be a B newspaper. Annalise has a question about how about online markets vis-a-vis this ABC categorization. So this ABC categorization does not work for photography or in a lot of ways at all for online markets. Online markets, if I were to explain to you the hierarchy, it would be completely different. So this A, B, and C thing that I'm explaining, these rules don't carry over. And likewise, the types of fee, price arrangements and things like that are gonna be different. And I would probably go up to E if I was going to separate online markets and how they pay different ways. I have a question from the bootcamp attendees who are in the other room while I am doing this webinar. The question is, will a B or an A magazine give credit and separate payment if you have your own photography? So this is a great question because a lot of you guys are, or not a lot of you guys, but there are a lot of people out there who are blogging couples who one person does the photography or the videography, and one person does the words. And generally with photos, as I mentioned, the rights are much more highly maintained with photography than they are with words. So with photos, it's not even just that the credit will be to the photographer, but often that credit will carry over for a long time. So the name will always appear with the photograph. And that's something that you can also stipulate in the contract. And especially if the fee seems low, push them about the credits. And if somebody else is shooting the photographs, then typically the pay will be separate because that's how it goes internally in terms of, you know, the person getting the credit has to have the thing on file and they have to have their own payment. I haven't typically seen couples, unless they have an LLC formed together, I haven't typically seen partners of writers and photographers get paid in one lump sum. It's typically separate. Okay, so let's get back to this. So I talked about B publications. So in B publications, you're going to start to see the situation where you are receiving a separate sum, whether it's a lump sum for all the photos that you shoot on that trip, or individual just the ones they buy, which is common in newspapers, but also with different magazines. You're going to start to see payment for those photos, but you're also going to start to see something else, which is important, which shows up a lot in the A markets. And what that is that you're going to start to see stock photography. And when I say stock photography, I don't mean like those goofy business people, that we see like on the healthcare ads where it's the, you know, let me make sure I have a black guy, an Asian woman, you know, an Indian man, and like a mom all together to make sure I touch all the bases of my demographics. I'm not talking about that type of stock photography. There's a lot of editorial stock photography, which are photos that could never be used in commercial stock that are meant to be used for magazines for this purpose. It's a huge area. It's an area that I'm not going to touch on it here. I can recommend you products to learn more about this, but it's an area which if you are sitting on a lot of photographs, you should definitely look at getting into. But this stock photography, you would be amazed at the types of things that you can find, which can be almost very similar to what a writer who wrote this story will have provided. But what that means is that if you are going somewhere very off the beaten path, hard to get to, if it's a festival that only happens once a year, you're most likely going to be in the situation where, see the case with the C magazines, that if you can't get those photos, those B magazines can't run the story. And when I say if you can't get those photos, I don't mean physically. I don't mean if you are not physically able to like be there and capture those photos. I mean, if the magazine doesn't feel like your photography skills are up to snuff for their newsstand quality of photographs, and you've pitched a story, they know they can't get photographs for elsewhere, they're not going to assign you the text of that story either. So that can be the case with B magazines. But you're going to notice when you look through B magazines, you're going to notice that the photos are quite good. They're newsstand quality, but they're a mix. They're a mix of writer generated or photographer generated and starting to get into stock. And as I mentioned when I said this about tea time, and this is something that I wanted to circle back to, is that magazine companies, publishing companies, those that have multiple magazines, often will still have a stock photographer whose job it is to shoot various features so that they have somebody essentially on retainer to do that rather than trying to find a new freelancer every time. They also shoot, and I don't have a photo of this for later, but they also shoot those product pages. So for instance, the magazine that we're going to look at later is Travel and Leisure. And in those product pages, I couldn't believe how many there were in this issue. I think it's because of a particular feature that they were running that was advice for the year, but they had so many things that were a layout of gear or a layout of clothing or a layout of accessories. And those are all shot by that in-house photographer. So if you see a magazine that has those sort of things that must have been shot by the magazine itself because it's so specific to the piece that were done in their own studio, it's a good indication that that magazine has a staff photographer or somebody who does photography as part of their job with the magazine. So let's talk about A magazine. So what's an A magazine? I talked about that quite a bit, but how do they handle the photography and will your photographs ever get there? That's really the big question, right? The answer is probably no. And I say that with like a little bit of, I hate to tell you this in my voice, but you know how I just said with B magazines, you can see when they have photographers on staff, they tend to have photographers on staff. The case with the A magazines is pretty much anything that they can get. They'll use some stock, yes, but pretty much anything that they can get through their own means, they will. And any photographs that are left, they will give to essentially famous photographers or photographers who are full-time, whether it's art or landscape or architecture photographers. And so it's, I don't even want to just say it's incredibly rare. I would say it's nigh unheard of for an A magazine to be assigning you both the photographs and the text. But that's also for another reason that we're going to look at in a minute. So I've talked a lot about the landscape of who may or may not publish your articles and why, what types of outlets and what types of stories you might need to be using photographs for. So now I want to talk a little bit about pay. So there's actually, if you guys know the website Who Pays Writers, there's also something called Who Pays Photographers. So there are ways out there for you to see specifically what people are paying for photography. Now, I just want to throw out a couple numbers because I think that, as I mentioned earlier, like we often have a lot of photos that we're sitting on, you know, either we don't know what to do with them or that we're giving them with, especially when you're writing online, who's paying you additional fees for your photos online if it's not the online outlet of a magazine or a newspaper. We get this conception sort of similar to blog posts that either no one is paying for this or like maybe you'll get $10 a photo or something like that. So If you are doing the photos for a whole story for a B magazine, the amount that you're getting for your photos should be similar to what you're getting for the piece. If you are doing photographs for a place that's buying individual photographs as opposed to buying, you know, giving you a lump sum for the whole piece, then you're looking more in the range of, you know, 35 to 50 per photograph, I would say would maybe be normal. And then it can just go up from there. But you're looking at least 35 to 50 per photograph when you're in the situation people are buying individually. But I say that from the viewpoint of these are the type of outlets that you want to be working with. You will find different rates out there. And like I said, see Who Pays Photographers, which is a website, for more individual information from one outlet to another. But I didn't want to take too much time to include lots and lots of examples of individual pay. I thought about making a chart, but I just thought we'd spend too much time on that because everybody wants to know how much everybody pays. But there's an important caveat that I want to give you, which is that when you are doing a story and you are doing both the words and the photographs, you need to budget for that. And what I mean budget is I mean budget your time, your attention, your tiredness level, your physical ability to carry all of this gear around as you run around to get your story. So I had a piece where this was, I guess, the first piece where I had been assigned the full photo package of a 6 to 8 page spread that I was doing the photos and the text. And it was a roundup, so I had to visit a number of places. And an interesting thing happened. So first of all, I didn't budget the time properly, okay? And I went out, but I had a food photography background. And so it was the kind of situation where I'm photographing primarily meals as far as I thought. And so I know how to do the play set for that. I was very experienced from having my food blog. And I would sit there and I'd get the shots. I would eat my things. I would take my notes, so on and so forth. So time comes to file the story. I file the story, I file the photographs, and then a curious thing happens. The editor has no edits whatsoever on the text, okay? But I had to go back and forth about the photos so many times. And why is this curious? Because I think we often think about editors going back ad nauseum with these changes in the text, asking us to do new interviews, rewriting information. But what happened was, I very much studied exactly what the structure of this story looked like from the text perspective, but I hadn't done it with the photos. And I actually think the next slide, I'm going to go to this slide because this is my embarrassing moment. I hadn't studied the photos that go with this piece, and this piece appears in every issue of this magazine, and I had studied the text, but I hadn't studied the photos. And what I hadn't noticed was that because it's a roundup, even though it's laid out, it's like a multi-page spread, because it's a roundup, they actually have a very bordering on cheesy posed photo of the proprietors of each establishment with each roundup. I hadn't noticed. In my head, when I thought about this piece, I didn't think that would be the kind of thing that would interest people to have like a little I'm on vacation style snapshot of these people in each of their places. And so what happened was that I totally missed the mark on the portfolio of photos that I provided to my editor. And this is the kind of thing where, like I said, it's just like stories. If you study the magazine, you will see exactly what they have done before and you will understand exactly what they want from you. And that's why today when we're talking about editorial photography and the photographs that magazines will buy, I'm talking to you so much. I haven't even shown you a photograph yet. I'm going to show you some at the end, but I want you after this webinar to pick up a magazine, any magazine that you have lying around, or just amble down to the bookstore, or there's so many magazines available online. In the travel magazine database, we always give you the link for where you can read that magazine online. I want you to flip through and look now with that critical eye that I tell you to have when you're reading magazines, to look at the photos with that critical eye of what do they have here? Do they only have these things that I wouldn't expect, which are not what I would shoot for this topic? Do they have a lot of a certain type of photo? Do they not have any of a certain type of photo? And we're going to go through a magazine in a second and do that. But I wanted to share this embarrassing moment with you because I know that this kind of thing happens to people with writing, but you need to also remember that it can happen with photographs. And you need to be really tuned in with what types of photographs the magazines are actually using. And another note on taking photos for stories is not the same as taking photos as you are reporting. So I mentioned how you have to budget extra time, but it is an effort. It is tiring on the one hand, but there are other things that come up. So look at this photo here. This is from a photo from a blog, which is actually a food blog, but it's actually a bit travel-y. And she now teaches photography classes. The blog is called Canel at Vanille. I'm going to put that here in the chat box. So I really recommend checking out her photos. She's really masterful with light. And she takes these photos that are posed without being overly posed. And like I said, she photographs food. She has an international bent. She also photographs people and places. So there's a lot going on there. But what I wanted to point out here is you notice she has two pots that have a variety of things on them. They've got some berries on top. She's got some berries on the side. The light is coming in from, on my screen, it's the right-hand side. I assume it looks the same for you. The light is coming in on the right-hand side. It's a little bit shadowed on the left. And the pots are just very specific angle to one another. This is probably not the very first setup that she had of these dishes. When I am shooting, especially food that you have your control over, I set up what I think is going to be pretty good. I take a couple of pictures. I look, I tweak, I move. And this is what needs to happen when you are photographing for stories out on the road, is that you, it's not even just that you're not getting one shot about something. It's that you need to shoot it. You need to look at it. You need to keep shooting it until you get the shot of that thing. And that can take longer than getting the information for your stories. So you need to plan that you're able to do that. And that means weather. It means light. And so sometimes it means things like getting up earlier or staying out late, sure. But you also need to have perhaps the flexibility in your itinerary that you might just need to stay there a couple extra days. Now, we're going to go through the magazine in a little bit, but I wanted to circle back with how the types of photographs that you're going to get inform the way that you are out in the field and shooting and doing your reporting at the same time. So we've talked a lot about interviews in the past, and it's something that I know for a lot of you guys was a bit scary, and now there's a lot more confidence about it, and I'm so happy for that. But it's a bit awkward to be having this wonderful conversation that you've started having with this person to get these great quotes from them, and then be like, can I take your picture for this story? First of all, they're going to be like, oh my God, let me hair this guy at the winery the other day. You should have seen all the fussing that he did to get ready for a picture. And you can't just say, okay, great, got it, thanks. You need to be like, actually, I need you to stand over here. Actually, can you turn a little bit this way? Let me look at it. Why don't we try this background? That's really breaking the scene of this wonderful conversation that you start having with this person. So it takes some chutzpah to be able to ask people to help you get the shots that you actually are going to need for your stories. So that's one thing. But there's also a lot about training yourself to notice things out there that aren't what you would typically photograph. And a lot of this is details. And when we go through the magazine spreads in a minute, I'm going to start pointing these things out to you as well. And like I mentioned, next week in the one on the shot list, we're going to really, really dig into this. But we've been talking here in the boot camp about how everything that you include in your story needs to really trace back to the why, to what this story is about, why it matters. And somebody here in the boot camp, who I think is the one that asked the question earlier, they're dialed in from the other room to listen to the webinar as well, mentioned this fantastic thing that she does. She says when she's writing about people who work with their hands, who make something, she photographs their hands. She photographs their hands in motion. She photographs their hands doing that job, because that is the perfect picture to illustrate this person as she's talking about how passionate they are about their work. That photo of them standing there, you know, posed with the pitchfork, like the famous painting, that doesn't illustrate them and their passion for their work, but these movements do. When we were out in the winery the other day, I noticed that the winemaker who was giving us the tour, she had this very neat way of sitting on top of the wine barrels. Every time she was giving us a tour in a room where there was a wine barrel, she would basically climb up and kind of sit on it like it was a bronco. But she did it in this very casual way, like that's what she always does. And I thought that that pose said so much about her. So there's certain times when you need to be getting the photograph of the person while you are on the tour. And while they are talking and gesticulating and moving a lot, because that's the one that best exemplifies their personality. If you try to do a pose shot with them later, it's going to be much harder for that passion to come out. So these are some of the things, just in terms of your time out in the field, that you need to think about incorporating. And another one of the webinars that we have coming up down the line is I'm going to have somebody who is a full-time professional photographer talk to us about how they set up their shoots, how they go through making sure that they get those shots, how many different things they tried, the various tactics that they use, if this, then that, so that you already know all those things, so that you don't run into them later in your professional life. So we already talked about my embarrassing moment. So I just want to take a second before we dive into the magazine to talk about types of photos and how the ones that are in travel magazines are a bit their own category. So I mentioned earlier stock and how stock is a different thing, and that those photos, like we said, they're all a bit cheesy, but there's also editorial stock. And the thing is that that editorial stock is inherently, you see a bit of art and you see a bit of photojournalism. They're not always stock photos that can be used in a magazine. So what is that difference? So photojournalism, and these are the types of things that everybody who's grown up, always wanting to have their photograph in National Geographic. National Geographic is the epitome of this. Life magazine was another one like this. Photojournalism endeavors in one frame to tell an entire feature story. So in a way, it's similar to a photograph that you might see in a photography museum, but it's very important that that photo speaks for itself and it tells something in the same way that our stories have to have a why does this matter to the reader? Why is this important? Why now? That photo has to tell so many things all within that one photo. And on the complete other end of the spectrum, photos that are for art are meant to not tell you what to think, but rather to inspire you to have your own thoughts about something. And I inherently feel weird saying, art isn't supposed to tell you what to think. This is exactly what art does. So take that with a grain of salt if you have your own opinions about art. But art inherently, in terms of the photographs and the types of photographs that we're talking about here, those photos are meant to have an aesthetic and meant to have a level of inspiration that's different than conveying information. The photojournalism types photos that I was talking about before, the conveyance of the information is incredibly paramount, that all of those things are captured there. So where do the photos in travel magazines fall into this? I like to think of the travel magazine style photo as something that's meant to illustrate a tiny aspect, a tiny snapshot of this greater thing. But unlike the photojournalism photos, it's not meant to tell the entire story. So, like including a quote from a source, or like describing a scene in the text of your story, this is something that contributes. This is something that adds to the story that you were telling the reader, but it doesn't have the weight, it doesn't have the responsibility of doing it all on its own in the same way that photojournalism does. So before we get into looking through the magazine, because I hope that will inspire some of the thoughts in you, I just want to go through some of these questions that we got both throughout the call and also right at the beginning. So the very first one is it necessary to have a DSLR? It's absolutely not. Like for the level of photographs that some of us are at, we just aren't happy with the depth of field and the light that we get on other items, but it's absolutely not necessary. You can shoot photos for magazines on your phone. I have for years. You can shoot them on a point and shoot. You absolutely don't need to go all the way in the investment of a DSLR. How saturated should photos be for publication? This is a really interesting question. And when I was preparing for this call, I was reading the photo guidelines of a couple different magazines, and I noticed that National Geographic is quite strict. Like they have a very detailed outline of the edits that you can and can't do, or that they would prefer you don't do. And this is actually mentioned, that the photos shouldn't be so saturated. And people typically discuss that, how much editing do you need to do on a photo? Only as much to make it look more like it looked in real life. So again, this is one of those questions where I'm not going to tell you how saturated it should or shouldn't be. But the point of your photographs is to depict on paper something that happened out in the world. So it shouldn't become more saturated than it was in reality, because then you're lying through that photograph. So that, even though I was saying photojournalism as a field is different than the photos we're taking for magazines, it's still journalism, and we still need to make sure that we're conveying an accurate representation of what we're photographing. Okay, next question. What are the cons, if any, to using photographs provided by the site, PR agency, travel board, etc.? If it's okay with the magazine, there's no cons. There's only pros, because then you don't have to spend time editing photos. You just have to email a couple people and wrangle them to get you the photos on deadline. So the only time it's a con is if you do it without telling your editor. So you should only and always use handouts, editor photos that come from other places, with the prior knowledge and support of the editor who has assigned you this story. Annalise has a great question. Please talk about signed releases, when and why. So this came up in a workshop that I was giving recently, I think when I was in Australia, and we talked about whether there are different laws in different places, and essentially it came down to this, that typically signed releases exist to protect people whose photos are being used in commercial contexts. And an anecdote about this that happened in New York is that there was a gentleman who was an actor. He had posed for some stock photographs. The photograph was manipulated to have him with an amputated leg for the purpose of a particular advertisement. And then he lost acting work because people had seen that photo and thought that his leg was amputated. So signed releases are to protect people from their image being used to represent or portray something that they have not agreed to in advance. So the technical sort of legal thing here, and again, I am not your lawyer, consult your personal lawyer, but is that photos for magazines that are not on the cover, I'll talk about that in a second, but photos in magazines, like I said, are editorial. That's why there's a separate area that is editorial stock versus commercial stock. And for those, you do not need permission to publish that piece, because in a way it's art, it's journalism, and it's not being used in a way that should be representing that person as something that they may or may not be. Now, the reason that the cover is different is that the cover is what is seen on the newsstand, and so it's used to sell the magazine. So anything being shot for a cover, which is of a person, needs to have a signed model release. And model releases are something that you can find very easily online. So if you find yourself in a place where you would like to use a photo that you've taken of somebody or of their property, you should also get releases for properties, okay? It's anybody who basically might sue you if they don't like how their visage or their reputation is being used in advertising. So also if it's property, so, and children is a whole other field that I'm not going to get into, but model releases are found online, and if you're traveling, you can just download one and send it to the person and say, can you sign off on this? So it's something that you can totally do on the fly if you find yourself in that situation. Okay, so I think I've gotten, oh, we've got one more story. How can you do if you are on a press trip and with a group? I'm not sure if I quite understand that question, so ask it again and I'll circle back later. Someone else asks, what is saturated? It's a type of setting that you can do on your photographs. You can change the exposure, which is how much light there is. You can change the saturation, which is how saturated, but how technicolor it is in a way. We can call it that. Okay, so we're going to dive in and start looking at the magazine that I had queued up for today. And I want to give two quick clarifications. So for copyright and liability purposes, I have taken somewhat crappy photos of the magazines that we're using today to be showing you my photos of this magazine and not be showing you a scan or like in some way ripping off the magazine. But secondly, I'm going to show you Travel and Leisure, which I mentioned earlier. But I told you that you can't get your photos in Travel and Leisure. So why am I showing you Travel and Leisure? I'm showing you Travel and Leisure because this is what people who are professionals, who are paid to do exclusively this is what they're doing. This is what you want, not just to aspire to, but this is what you want to learn from. So if you are learning about what your photograph should be looking like, start by learning at the top. Start by learning from these things and then circle back. Like I said, don't be me with that assignment. Then circle back to exactly what is the magazine that I want to pitch, exactly what are they using, and exactly what are they looking for. So let's look. Like I said, crappy photos on purpose, people. So this photo is a department. So this is a shorter piece. It's about an island called Tinos in Greece. And I picked this and I also picked a feature and I picked it for a couple different reasons because I want to show you two things. So I mentioned that this is travel and leisure and that this is what you should aspire to. And it's very easy to look at this photograph here of this street in this town and say, I could take that photo. Look, there's all these shadows here. It's not even that the light is perfect. It's just a street. Like, that's no big deal. I've got this. So I wanted to mention that there was an article, I think last January, February, in Bon Appetit, which was basically like, please stop sharing horrible photos on Instagram. Here is how you can take better photos. And it was Bon Appetit's guide to taking better photos of your food to make the world a better place through more beautiful Instagram photos. And something that they said that I find myself saying to everyone from writers to my husband constantly is that the camera either needs to be parallel or perpendicular to the shot, and there is no other options. So as you're taking photographs, like I said, we're not going to get too much into photograph theory and practice, but you may have heard of something called the rule of thirds, which is where you place your subject in the scene. If not, it's worth reading about. But what I want to remind you is that with magazine photos, the plane of the horizon is correct. So in order to achieve that, you need to check yourself in terms of how you are holding your camera or your phone and whether it is parallel to your body or parallel to the ground, because that's how you're going to get photos that on the page show perspective. And when I really contemplated very hard whether I wanted to show you some not great photos on various blogs, and I just didn't want to throw anybody who might, you know, potentially be unhappy about that under the bus. So I decided not to show you bad photos and only show you good photos, but you can go out and find them very easily yourself. But this is something to look for, is if the camera is at a slight angle, it distorts that perspective. So a photo in a magazine, in a good magazine, the types of photos that you will be able to shoot for magazines and get paid for, will always have this perspective correctly done. If the camera is turned slightly, when you look at it, it's kind of this visually disorienting thing, and that doesn't play. And this gets back to when I said you need to take the photo, look at it, does it work, and try to take it again. Because sometimes you just didn't realize that where you were standing has slightly messed up the perspective, or there's something in the way that's actually curved, that even though that's how it is in real life, when it's flattened into the photo, it just doesn't come out. So even though this looks like a very, very normal street picture, it might not be the one that you shoot first and foremost. Now, again, crappy pictures for liability purposes, people. But I wanted to show you these, and we're going to get more into this when I pull out the feature story. So this is a very simple, almost artistic shot of this blue window with these plants underneath. The background is very plain white. There's a little bit of color pop. There's not very much going on in this photo, but it takes up the whole page. Now, this is the kind of photo that some of us will stop and shoot as we're going around, but maybe some of us won't. Maybe some of us don't think to look for that color pop, that little bit of detail. But I want to point out to you also how this is 100% flat. Like I was talking about, this photo and its simplicity plays. It works because the framing was correct. But look at this photo next to it, which I've actually even cut off a bit because I'm so unhappy with it. But this photo of this table and this chair, it's got that perspective distortion that I was talking about. It confuses you, and the light is not awesome. And that's why this one is the full page and this is not. And what I really think looking at this is that whoever did the photos for this thing couldn't get that many that were great. And they had to run with what they had. And this was not the kind of photo that they would have chosen. But perhaps the writer talked about it in the piece, and so they had to have a photo of it, and they just didn't have a good one. These things happen. Now, this thing, next thing here that I'm showing you is a roundup. And I pretty much guarantee you that these photos are handout photos. These photos are photos that have come from items pictured. And why do I say that? Because they're very, very standard from outside across the street, photos of buildings and a photo of a cup of coffee with a pretty thing on this. Like, I don't think you could get any more standard than this. So this is the kind of thing where you see this, it's a good indication that these photos are handouts. This is another department that I wanted to show you. So I mentioned that I showed you that department, which was the one about Tinos in Greece. This other department that I wanted to show you, this is about beer in Beijing. And I wanted to show you this because it's the kind of shot that, it's a shot that is both of a detail. It's primarily of this menu and of these beer spouts, but it sets the scene because, you know, you see the beer, but then it's in Chinese. You immediately are like, oh, this is something different. Now, I've gotten a little pause going on here in the feed, so let me know if you're having trouble hearing me. But this is the rest of the beer piece. So in the rest of the beer piece, you'll see two different types of photos here. And in these photos, there's one where you'll see the table set and the light, like I said, the light is fabulous. There's nothing else on that table. The table is very clean. It has been not doctored digitally, but they have set up this table for this photo to play as a magazine photo, okay? And below it, there's just a very typical little street scene here. And this gets into, like I said, what we're gonna talk about next week, which is the variety of photos that you need to include. And so this was why I wanted to show you this thing. So they start with this detail scene setting of the beer, and then we get into expanding out, showing the setting, showing people, versus something that has no people, and it's very much more of a still life of beer and food. So now I'm gonna get into this feature that I said I wanted to show you a feature because features are the best test case. And like I said, I recommend you all pick up a magazine and flip through it after this, but features are the best test case of what we're gonna talk about next week, which is the variety of photos, the variety of different subject matters, close versus far, detail shots, people versus objects that you need to have in a piece. So you'll see up here at the top where my hand is holding this, that here we have a big landscape from above. Then we have a shot of a hotel. So these are again scene setting ones. But then counterbalancing that, we have this very composed, very well lit photo of this cocktail here. And then adjacent to that, we have this very, again, detail shot of this gecko. I'm not quite sure what the animal is, but it's a juxtaposition between the far off, extra far off, like medium far off, and the close-ups of these other objects. So let's look at the rest of this feature. Oh, so this is actually a different feature. So this is about pastries in Paris, and I just love this spread. This spread just grabbed me so much. This was actually why I wanted to use this magazine. So they've got this close-up of these croissants, okay? That is the first photo here, and it's juxtaposed with this very traditional boulangerie entrance, but this is a photo that's just objects, and this one has movement. This one has people. So as we continue through, again, you'll see object that's not as close, person in action but without the faces, people from far away, sort of like a portrait style shot of this person involved. And so you see that it does, it's not that you just need to have different subjects, and you do need to have quite a few different subjects, but you also need to have different depths in terms of how close you are to that photo. And then this is actually the last photo in the piece. This is also one of a person, but there was a little glare on it, but this one is a very sort of posed, almost art style shot of him with this beautiful set of trays and plates of the pastries. Thank you guys so much.